state of the United States and its honorable board.
Morning. Before you begin, let me welcome our guests from Iraq. We are awfully glad to have you here this morning. All right, go ahead.
May it please the court, Sandra Rowland on behalf of Kenneth Milstead. The Sentencing Commission has determined that a misdemeanor conviction for writing a bad check should be excluded from the criminal history category, absent certain circumstances that don't apply here. In 2003, Mr. Milstead wrote a bad check as payment for a hotel room that he had used. For that conduct, the state of Georgia lodged two charges, deposit account fraud, which is essentially writing a bad check, and theft of services. Mr. Milstead pled guilty to theft of services, after which the prosecution moved to dismiss the bad check charge. Mr. Milstead's Georgia conviction for theft of services, which was by writing a bad check, should have been excluded from the calculation under 4A1.3C. Consistent with the Sentencing Commission's first objective, which is honesty in sentencing, it has said that comparing the elements and the penalties of the listed and unlisted offenses is not enough. It doesn't promote honesty in sentencing, and it doesn't comport with common sense.
Let me ask you, if we agree with you, why is this not harmless error? I mean, it seems to me that the district judge made pretty clear that she wasn't relying on criminal history. She said that's another entirely different issue.
A district court is required to begin to determine the sentence by correctly calculating the guidelines. There have been cases where a district court has said, you know, I disagree with the defense as to whether these points should apply or whatever the issue is. Even if I'm wrong, I would give you this same sentence. That is not the circumstance here. So a district court needs to...
Do you think that's necessary for the district court to say that, even if I'm wrong?
Absolutely.
Well, that reads harmless error right out of,
the guidelines are the starting block, and if you haven't correctly calculated the guidelines, then you can't necessarily know how far beyond that you might want to go with an upward departure or with a downward departure. If she, wanted to increase the penalty by 50%, or 20% or something, she needed to know where she was starting from. And
I guess the sentence was 21 months over the upper range, right? And if your calculation had been correct, there would have been 5 months less, right? Under your calculation, 36
correct.
Months was the high end. So we don't know why she chose 72,
right?
And it could have been linked to the guidelines, and it may not have been. I don't know. It probably wasn't, but we don't know for sure, right?
Right. Absent some very explicit statement that no matter what your guideline calculation is, I think you deserve 72 months or 120 months, we can't know what the judge would have done, and it's not harmless.
On the issue you started with, I guess one of the things that surprises me about this case is reading the application note or the commentary, you don't see actual offense conduct listed as one of those factors. And all the other courts of appeals, which helps you, of course, have identified that as a consideration here. How are we to deal with that?
Well, what the Sentencing Commission appeared to have done there was simply adopt the Fifth Circuit's decision in Hardiman, which listed those factors and then went on to consider the actual conduct, the defendant's actual conduct in the prior offense. I think that And obviously, it's not an exhaustive list. It says
the
district court should consider factors such as. Arguably the fourth, but certainly the fifth factor that they suggest really requires looking back at the actual conduct to determine whether that prior offense indicated a likelihood of recidivism. Which brings me to another point. I didn't say in my reply brief, but I would like to say now, that that factor really is not, hindsight is not involved in that factor. When determining whether the prior offense indicated a likelihood of recidivism, you're looking at the offense in 2003, not looking back and saying, well, he's committed some more offenses, so I guess it did indicate recidivism, which would be true in every case. But you can't make that determination without actually looking at, without looking at the actual conduct. The level of culpability, the fourth factor, also might include looking at the actual conduct.
I guess another argument is just such as means it's not an exhaustive list. So.
Right.
But does looking at the actual conduct really help you here?
Yes, because the offense that he committed two offenses. And I think that every time you write a bad check, you're committing two offenses. He wrote a bad check in payment for services that he had received. So he committed theft of services and he committed writing a bad check. But the underlying conduct of the theft of services wasn't using counterfeit money. It wasn't simply walking away. It was conduct that the Sentencing Commission has said is should not be included in the calculation.
But in some ways, that offense is similar to the current offense, which is fraud, right? Taking advantage of people.
There is an element of deception in both, but the offense of writing a bad check, which is considered a fairly minor misdemeanor offense and one for which he received a $187 fine when it could have gone up to $1,000, is not on par with the offense of mail fraud. And not all frauds are the same. I don't think that the Sentencing Commission intended to say that every, if your prior offense was a fraud, that it's necessarily similar to this. Writing a bad check, apparently, according to the Sentencing Commission, is on an entirely different order than mail fraud. Two of the five factors suggested by the Sentencing Commission and by the court in Hardiman revolve around the perceived seriousness of the offenses and the penalties involved. As the Second Circuit put it in Ubiera, the case on which the government principally relies, the question is whether the unlisted offense is without reservation more serious than the listed offense. Theft of services is not more serious than writing a bad check in Georgia. In fact, it appears to be less serious. Theft of services is a misdemeanor but becomes a felony if the dollar amount reaches $1,500. On the other hand, writing a bad check is a misdemeanor that becomes a felony at a lower threshold if the dollar amount was $1,000. The fines are virtually identical, and the fine actually imposed here, $187.50, indicates that the Georgia court did not find the offense serious enough to even come close to the $1,000 fine that he could have imposed. We request that the court vacate the sentence and remand the case to the district court with instructions to resentence Mr. Milstead using criminal history category 2. If the court has no further questions, I will reserve my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. Ms. Amaluru?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Uma Amaluru, and I represent the United States. I'll begin with the guideline calculation issue. The district court did not commit reversible error when it included the theft of services conviction in calculating appellant's criminal history category. Theft of services is not identified as an excludable offense in the guidelines. It is not similar to insufficient funds check. The two crimes are meaningfully different. They have different elements, different moral culpability, and different possible punishments.
You all took a different position in the district court.
We did, Your Honor.
What's changed?
Having taken a closer look at the law, the government, we made an argument. We were overruled by the district court. Having taken a closer look on appeal, we determined that the district court did, in fact, have it correct. And
Your position is that we should not consider the actual offense conduct, correct?
No. The government's position is that the guidelines provide the appropriate analysis. That analysis does not discuss actual offense conduct. We recognize that.
So the answer to my question is we don't look at actual offense conduct. Right?
Well, if the other circuits have looked at actual offense conduct, but the appropriate analysis should begin with the factors outlined by the guidelines.
I agree, but should it end with those?
If the court feels that actual offense conduct is helpful in determining whether, after having gone through the factors, whether it's still unclear if the conviction at issue is so minor that it should not be included, then actual offense conduct may be helpful. But
well, it seems to me that's an important point in this case, and your success may hinge on that, it seems to me, because if we don't look at actual offense conduct, I think you've got a strong position. But if we do, it does seem very similar to passing a bad check, and therefore you wouldn't count it. You seem to be telling me now I can look at the government's view is that I can look at the actual offense conduct?
Actual offense conduct is not something that can trump all of the factors that are outlined in the guidelines. So if the factors outlined in the guidelines point to the conclusion that a conviction should not be included, then that should be sufficient under what the guidelines authors have provided as the analysis. If, however, the court still would like to look at the actual offense conduct, the other circuits have suggested that that may be appropriate. In this case, however,
do you agree with those other circuits on that?
That actual offense conduct is appropriate to look at?
Mm-hmm.
In this case, Your Honor, I think the actual offense conduct goes right along with the factors identified by the guidelines.
I know. My question is, do you agree with the other circuits?
Yes, Your Honor. I think if the court finds it helpful to look at the actual offense conduct after going through the guideline factors, then the court may look at the actual offense conduct. The actual offense conduct in this case, however, is not just that he issued a bad check. He obtained services from a hotel with deception and with the intent to avoid payment. That crime is completely separate and happened and occurred prior to the issuance of a bad check. The fact that he issued a bad check as part of this fraudulent
scheme. Doesn't that always happen when you issue a bad check?
No, because you could issue a bad check. Well, let's say, and this is why actually theft of services, I think, involves more moral culpability. Let's say the hotel had not trusted him to provide services in advance and asked for payment up front, and he tried to issue a bad check. He wouldn't have completed the act of theft, but he would have issued a bad check. So every act of issuing a bad check does not equal theft. Theft of services involves much a greater abuse of trust. The hotel allowed him to stay in the room, provided services to him, relying on a trust that he would pay for them. The conviction is for theft of services, which means that he obtained those services knowing that he was not going to pay for them. That is a completely separate crime from simply writing a bad check. And appellant attempts to conflate the two acts, but recognizes that there were, in fact, two charges. And it is not, the analysis for this court is not whether the fact that he wrote a bad check is something that should be excluded from the analysis. The analysis is whether his theft of services from a hotel, services that were above $400, is conduct that is of such minor significance that it's not relevant to the goals of sentencing.
Could you address harmless error just in case we don't agree?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The district court sentence makes clear that the court was not relying on the recommended guidelines range. The district court imposed a sentence of 72 months. That's a clean 6 years. It's reasonable to presume that the court chose that number not because it was tied to the guidelines range in any way. As Judge Kavanaugh pointed out, it's about 21 months higher than the top of the guidelines range. Instead, 72 months and the district court's comments when she imposed the sentence suggest that she had a sentence in mind given the circumstances of the case, given the scope of the crime, given the number of victims, given the collateral damages. And although the district court did not specifically say, I would have imposed this sentence even if I had reached a different conclusion on the criminal history calculation, the district court need not say something like that explicitly. She certainly did not say, I'm adding a certain percentage on top of the recommended guidelines range. She did not say that she was going to add 20 months to the top of the guidelines range. She went through the analysis as to why the recommended guidelines range was not appropriate in the case, and then said, I'm imposing a sentence of 72 months, which is just and reasonable given the length of the crime, the number of victims, the amount of money, and the collateral consequences.
How do we know that the guidelines, though, wasn't the launching pad for the ultimate calculation? It may only be a few months, but a few months matters. How do we know that wasn't the launching pad?
Because the district court's comments make clear that her sentence wasn't tied to that range. I mean, and yes,
I think it's just ambiguous or silent about that, isn't it?
We
just don't know, I think. What's your best case for circumstances like this being treated as harmless error?
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not able to recall a case off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know if there is one where it's this ambiguous. It's kind of why I asked the question, but maybe an unfair question. I'm not sure I've seen a case where it's quite like this, but maybe I'm wrong.
Let me ask you this. How do you read her statement, the point of the criminal history category going from 2 to 3 is an entirely different issue? And she says, and I think I'm right, and I think my analysis on that is correct given Georgia law. She did not say, if I'm wrong, he gets the same sentence. But I don't know, what do you think she meant by it's an entirely different issue?
I think that part of the discussion is simply her rehearsing the factors that went into the calculation of the guidelines range and her determination that the range that comes out of those factors was insufficient because she was in terms of an approximation of the appropriate guidelines range. I think that statement was simply just her going through how the guidelines got to the recommended guidelines range, but I don't think that is relevant to whether she made her decision as to 72 months based on the guidelines range or whether it was based on the criminal history calculation. I think her point was the guidelines have contemplated certain factors. The ultimate result that the guidelines have come up with when considering those factors is not sufficient in this case, given the particular circumstances of this case, given his life spent kind of committing crimes but avoiding, some punishment, the severity of the collateral consequences to the victims.
Well, the sentence was a lot more than what the government wanted.
It was.
There's another statement that she makes here She says, I think this is exactly the kind of case in which the guideline provision speaks to the small specifics, which aren't that small, of an underlying crime. And my discretion speaks to impacts of this crime, which are not reflected in how the guideline calculation is put together. So there, she's specifically talking about the guidance. What do you think that means when she says my discretion speaks to something different?
I think what she's saying is that she has the discretion to look at what the guidelines recommend and determine that there are particular circumstances in the crime that is before her that are not being addressed by the guidelines appropriately. And so that's, I think what she's saying is, I understand the guidelines are thinking about these, but I think there's much more going on in this case, and specifically, the district court appears to be affected by the collateral consequences of this wide-scale fraud, how it affected these people's credit scores, and, you know, that they were getting calls from people saying, you know, from collection agencies that they were continuing to suffer damages beyond simply just the loss of money, and that she thought the guidelines range, though it considered some of these factors, was not coming out where it needed to be when given the circumstances of the crime before her.
Which is classic departure language. In other words, the guidelines may have considered this, but in this case, not adequately, and not reflected in that calculation.
Correct, Your Honor.
When the district judge sentences outside the guidelines, above the guidelines, and it turns out there was an error in the guideline, and the district court says because the guidelines do not adequately reflect what I think is the severity of the crime, and it turns out there had been an error in the guidelines calculation, is it always harmless?
I'm sorry, is it always harmless?
That there was an error in the guidelines calculation because the district court has said that I don't think the guideline sentence that I calculated adequately reflects the severity of the crime, so I'm going to give you, let's say, a sentence of 72 months, as we have here. And there was an error in the calculation. Isn't it always harmless by your theory?
No, Your Honor. I think the fact that it's harmless in this case because the district court sentenced the number itself in addition
to... sentenced outside the guidelines.
It did sentence outside the guidelines. But, well, first of all, it indicates that even with the higher guidelines range, which was higher because of the criminal history calculation, even with that, that was not sufficient for the district court. The district court did not think that this number, the higher number, was sufficient. But the district court's comments make clear that to the extent the court finds that the calculation was erroneous, the district court's comments suggest that it was not, that her sentence was not tied to the calculation of the guidelines. She didn't think that...
That's always... I guess, is too strong. It's usually going to be the case when you vary or depart above the guidelines, that's because you don't think the guidelines are the basis for the sentence.
No, Your Honor, I disagree, because some courts do say...
Sometimes they say, I want to go a little bit above the guidelines.
Or they say, I'm adding 20 months because
yes.
I think this is reflected in
right.
something. I'm adding a percentage. I mean,
so in that case, clearly not harmless.
That would not be harmless, right. And that's not the issue. That's not the case here. The comments here suggest that the district court had a sentence in mind that was tied to the conduct that she was looking at. She did discuss, because she had to, she discussed why the recommended guidelines range was not adequate, but when she imposed her sentence, she wasn't tying it to the guidelines range. She said, this is what's appropriate.
I don't want to prolong this, but I think we have three categories where the district court specifically ties the variance or departure to something in the guidelines. I want to go a little bit above the guidelines. The other is where the district court says, I'm going to give you 72 months regardless
right.
of what the guidelines. And then there's a third middle category, I suppose, where the district court gives the sentence, says it's varying above the guidelines, but doesn't say either I would have done this anyway, and doesn't say I'm trying to get a certain percentage above the guidelines. And on that middle category, are you aware of a case that says it's harmless error? I guess I asked that before. I don't think we are aware of the case.
I apologize, Your Honor, that I cannot recall a case. I do think that this case is closer to that latter category that you described
mm-hmm.
because of circumstances such as the number, the 70, this is a clean 6 years, the comments by the district court that, you know, this is what was, this is the sentence that was just and reasonable.
She ignored the parties as well.
I'm sorry?
She ignored the parties' recommendations as well.
She did, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If there are no further questions, we ask for the court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Does Ms. Rowland have any time?
Ms. Rowland had a bit.
Okay.
Departing from the guidelines means knowing what you're departing from. It needs means knowing what the starting point is, and the judge didn't hear. I would also disagree with the court's interpretation of what the judge did as ignoring the party's recommendations. She did not ignore them. She ruled as a legal matter that that the conviction should be counted. It wasn't simply ignoring it. She made a legal ruling, and we've challenged that ruling. There are no factual disputes in this case, and the record is sufficient for the court to determine de novo whether the conviction should have been excluded. Given that, it's our contention that the appropriate course of action is to vacate the sentence and remand it to the district court with instructions that she calculate the guidelines with Mr. Milstead being in Category 2.
What's the problem with the government's... What? I'm sorry. Well, go ahead.
And then she can, if she has valid reasons to depart from the guidelines, from that guideline range, she can.
What's the problem with the government's harmless error point?
Their point that it wasn't based
Your point
on...
The point is that it wasn't based on the guidelines, and the court made relatively clear that it was choosing a sentence deliberately outside the guidelines, and it wasn't linked to, oh, I want to go a year above the guidelines or...
Well, we don't know what it was linked to, but I think that the government's argument makes the guidelines irrelevant rather than advisory. A sentence is always linked in some sense to the guidelines because you can't depart up or you can't vary from the guidelines until you know what the guidelines are. And again, you know, perhaps she, using the correct guideline, would sentence him at 72 months. Perhaps not. But district courts must calculate the guidelines correctly, and it's not harmless error simply because they then gave a higher sentence.
Any more questions?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll